I'm Faith Middleton. It's great to have you joining the party on the Food Schmooze here on WNPR in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. My food buddies are here, Mark Raymond of Frederick Wildman & Sons, producers Laurie Mack and Jonathan McNichol, and Chris Presbury of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut. You can tell your friends no matter where they live, they can listen to the Food Schmooze from anywhere in the world, as many people do at WNPR.org. Now, ahead, we have Roy Ipp of the French Bistro Le Petit Café on the Green in downtown Brantford, Connecticut. And I've asked Roy to bring a dish he makes for family at home. This is his weekend vinegar chicken. So delicious. But before we get to that, I want to bring back a recipe and a 10-minute conversation. So many requests for this one, and I adore it. I've described this on the previous Food Schmooze as the limbo rock of comfort food. Here's the short segment. Once again, back by popular demand, I call this dish mitza, and it's what happens when you cross pizza with meatloaf. This mitza has no dough, so it is so good, so fun, so paleo, and gluten-free too. And here's what you do. You make, and Chris, you just made up a batch that we had just now.
Crazy
you make
good.
You make a ground meat mixture of, like meatloaf, breadcrumbs. You can use gluten-free if you need them. A tomato sauce or pasta sauce in a jar, egg, garlic, onion, and some basil and oregano. You mush that all together as if you're making meatloaf, except you make it into a circle about the size of a medium pizza. And so it's about, I would say about an inch thick. Wouldn't you, Chris?
Yeah, maybe three quarters of an inch thick.
Yeah. Then, oh, that's when the fun begins. You top it with your favorite pizza toppings. And I asked Chris this time to do something that was really fun for me. A layer of mashed potatoes first in that shepherd pie style. But some Italian pizzas have mashed potatoes. And then all the favorite pizza toppings. We're going to hear what Chris chose for us. So on top of that. And then you just bake it in the oven, and it slices like a pizza. There is no dough. It's mitza, and it is crazy, crazy good.
It's what phenomenal. Did you all think? Oh, my God. The flavor, it's incredible. It's incredible.
It tastes like pizza.
And the house smelled like pizza while I was baking it, too. That was the crazy thing. I'm like, I smell pizza.
That's what I was thinking. You know, for not everybody is gluten-free, of course, but there are people who, you know, try to eat more of a protein diet. And there are other people who, you know, have gluten issues and they don't want the wheat stuff. They can't have bread. And a lot of the gluten pizza dough is pretty awful. Here is your way around it.
Didn't need the dough.
This was the most super meatloafy type thing, mitza. This is the
and it just like
I don't
pizza.
Think I'll ever have a meatloaf again. Not, this is my thing.
I am not a meatloaf fan. My kids will tell you I steer clear of it. But I'll tell you what, this is to me the bottom was like a meatball.
Yeah,
and then you had sort of like this pseudo shepherd pie thing going on, and then the tomatoes. It looked like a pizza.
I told Faith she invented open faced. Right?
Open-faced
shepherd's pie.
Exactly.
Well, this recipe we're talking about is on our website right now or anytime you want, but you can go right now to WNPR.org and just click on programs. You'll see the Faith Middleton Show. It'll take you right to the page and right to the recipe. WNPR.org, just click on programs for the Faith Middleton Show.
And talking about party food, when you bring this to the table, it has that wow factor, and that's what I think the crazy good part is as well, that when you bring this to the table, you're bringing pizza to the table. Everyone's going to think it's pizza, but then you cut it, and you're like, wait a minute, what is it?
Where's the dough?
Where's the dough? What is? But it looks like pizza, and it smells
like pizza.
And it tastes like, but wait, it's got that really cool effect, and the visual – like the way we served it on a nice little platter, it just shows like
look,
when
really
I
well.
First when I first saw it, I thought it was a deep dish pizza.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
That's
and
basically.
Then when I finally bit into it, I was like, oh my god,
right. he
this
asked,
is
like,
shepherd's pie.
Yes, like what is it? I'm like, I can't tell you.
So let me give credit where credit is due. The inspiration for this came from James Beard, the food legend, who died some time ago. The James Beard Awards, which are the kind of Oscars in the food world, his home has been turned into a food palace and showcase for chefs around the country and sometimes the world. There's a big, giant collection of his recipes.
Yeah,
and
I read it
sometimes just to look at things and learn. And so I come upon one, and it says hamburger pizza. And I looked at it, and I thought, what? This has no dough. And he's having you make the tomato sauce from all scratch and all those things.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know what? I can slim this down. Plus, I can add things to this that are fun. So he deserves credit for the inspiration on this. And of course, he had the most exquisite taste about food and would serve this at parties. So that's why this fits in with our party theme. So we're going to go. And by the way, there's a picture of the one we just ate at our website, because Chris and Lori and I each took a turn at making. This is not food stylist photography, but it looks pretty darn good. It looks pretty good. So, and we had fresh basil on the top.
Yeah, so the toppings.
What'd you put on for your toppings?
Olives. Kalamata olives that I just chopped up, fresh tomato, a little bit of goat cheese, and Parmesan Reggiano.
Okay, because, you know, you could do mozzarella.
Oh, and bacon. Don't forget
the crispy bacon.
Oh, the bacon was there.
That was really good. It went so great with the mashed potatoes, but you could do mozzarella. You could do four cheeses.
Anything.
You could do anchovies. You could do whatever, capers, anything, sausage, whatever you
shrimp
like.
To make it a meat fish pie.
Mm. A meat fish pie?
Yeah.
Would that be good?
Yeah.
Yeah? Well,
oh, God,
a steak and lobster. A
steak and lobster.
This is what people
sure
do.
Surf and turf.
Surf and turf pizza.
You make it.
We're getting crazy.
We could call it termizza.
Termizza. You've just coined a new word. Mizza is a new word. I'm sending it into the Colbert Report.
I'm telling you.
He's the keeper of all new words now. And
that
mizza should be a word.
I know. Plus, I think he would really like this.
We should send him a mizza.
Yeah. Okay. I think we should deliver
him
a mizza. Okay.
Right. And you could actually freeze the mizza.
Oh, totally.
And then cook it the next day.
Oh, here's the thing. Chris, I say to Chris, this is great that you said that, Mark, because I said to Chris, you know, you could make the hamburger part on the bottom, put that in the refrigerator, dice up all your toppings, and then on the day you want to make it, leave it out so it comes to room temperature, and then just throw it in the oven. And Chris said, I did you one better.
Yeah, I did the whole thing the night before. So I actually made the meat, pressed it down like you're supposed to on the little foil thing, and then topped it. And then I just had all the toppings on it. I covered it in plastic wrap right on the little cookie sheet, and I threw it in the oven. And then time to bake it, I just pulled it out and threw it in the oven. So it was all done a day ahead.
So we're doing that turning of the corner as we go from the wild holiday party season. And to me, if anybody's smart, they keep those parties going all through the depths of the winter, because it's so bad in the winter. So here's the thing that we want to know. Oh, Chris, what are you saying? You're signaling me.
No, I just popped into my head. And if you're going to throw a party, this is a really good low-cost, high wow factor way of doing it.
You mean our mizza?
The mizza, because it doesn't cost. If you think about what the ingredients, and it just came to me, what the ingredients cost. You're talking about a pound and a half of ground beef. And then a little bit of your jarred sauce, leftover mashed potatoes. You're talking about
breadcrumbs. And you can use gluten-free if you want.
Yeah, sure. But again, cheap, inexpensive, really wow factor dish.
The most fantastic gluten-free breadcrumbs are made by Alea. This is a company in Old Saybrook, and they specialize totally gluten-free factory. Nothing with gluten in it gets made in this factory. And they're in Old Saybrook, Connecticut. They have a wonderful sense of taste. And so it's not like for gluten-free people that you have to say, oh, yeah, here's my substitute. It's okay, at least, but I can't have the real thing. This is just plain good, because I eat their gluten-free cookies just because they're good. They're just tremendous. So give them a try. They're in most major supermarkets, including Stop and Shop. Alea's Panko Breadcrumbs. I think she does a couple that are seasoned, too.
And this is really the one for gluten-free people. This mizza.
This mizza is so good.
It's for gluten-free
people. It really is.
Right? You put the gluten-free breadcrumbs in, and you're now back in the pizza game.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. Okay. And think of how you can play with this. If you wanted to do mashed sweet potatoes, then you would change. You know, I think you might want to fool with your red sauce.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not sure what you would do.
Could you do a white sauce?
Maybe you could.
You could mix it up and do it with ground turkey, ground pork. You don't have to do hamburger.
Yeah,
you
which
could
would
get
be
really cool with this.
Really,
you
I know.
Could, you could theme it out to it's I got know. Sort of a Spanish flair. You could do a French flair.
So, Mark, your wife is from Argentina.
Yes.
And so what would you do? What do you think she would do, the both of you, to
oh
make
my God,
this
we,
Argentinian?
We would douse the beef in chimichurri as oh. the in the sort of make it a meatball
marinate
chimichurri.
It? Oh,
yeah. Right?
So what would go in your chimichurri?
Oh, well, you've got – your basic is garlic, olive oil, parsley.
Okay.
But then, you know, some people put in smoked paprika. Some people put in hot
wow.
pepper, crushed red pepper.
Uh-huh.
You know, whatever
like,
your, you know, sort of delicatessa type of
juice.
Flair is.
Okay, but so mix that into the meat.
Mix it into the meat. So
oh,
then,
yeah.
Mark, what
yeah.
would you do with your sauce? Would you keep it red?
I don't know if I would put red sauce in. I think I'd put the potatoes on it, and then I'd think
sure.
of some really cool vegetables to put on top.
Uh-huh.
You know, maybe some chopped tomatoes. And maybe even remove the tomatoes. Maybe you put like a umita corn, like a creamed corn type of thing.
How about slow-cooked pork? Would you strip?
Oh, with barbecue sauce? Oh.
All right, here's what we're going to do because we're coming up to a quick break. Again, you can go to our website right now to see Mitza, which is a hamburger pizza without the dough, a layer of mashed potatoes, and unbelievable toppings. It tastes incredibly like a cross between meatloaf and pizza. You've never tasted it. It is crazy, crazy delicious. We dipped into the archive to bring back Mitza. So many hits on the website, and it's there again right now. So easy to make. Go now to WNPR.org. Click on Programs for the Faith Middleton Show. Ahead, we have Chef Roy Ipp and the weekend dish he cooks at home, vinegar chicken. I hope you will make a charitable contribution to feed the hungry. So many more people going to soup kitchens. And more mouthwatering conversation and fun here on The Fooch Moose. We'll be right back.
I like to dance. I like to sing. I like to do my Cajun thing. But what I like the best is Mama's cooking more than all the rest. Mama's cooking starts out hot. She puts crawfish in a pot. She makes a roux so dark and sweet. Mama's cooking what I like.
Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread.
Beans and cornbread had a fight.
Beans
knocked cornbread out of sight.
Beans.
Cornbread said, now that's all right.
Beans.
Meet me on the corner tomorrow night.
I'll be ready.
I'm Faith Middleton. The Fooch Moose Party here on WNPR is heard Wednesdays at 3 and 9 p.m. and Saturdays at noon. Join the conversation with us on Facebook. Simply search The Faith Middleton Show. Thanks to our talented crew, senior contributor Chris Prosperi of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut, Eugene Amatruda, Marion Roy, senior producer Lori Mack, and producer Jonathan McNichol. We thank you first and foremost for listening. And Chris Prosperi, congratulations on your 3-star review in Connecticut Magazine.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Congratulations.
Really, very nice.
Very excited.
And Roy Ipp is here, chef and co-owner of the French Bistro Le Petit Café on the Green in downtown Branford, Connecticut. Welcome back, Roy.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, so we are so excited because Roy made us one of his favorite dishes to eat at home. This is his vinegar chicken, which is on our website right now, along with Mitza. And you just go, of course, to WNPR.org and click on Programs for the Faith Middleton Show. You'll see the Fooch Moose link. So we just finished a pot,
yum.
A cast iron
the
pot.
The best chicken I have ever had.
It was so delicious. Don't blame
more.
Me if people start asking for it in the restaurant.
That's
don't blame
should
me.
Should do it at the restaurant.
Oh, we're going to tell you how to make it here on the show. Vinegar chicken. You know what surprised me, Roy, is I looked this up last night because I thought, You know, this scene reminds me of a kind of Philippine dish that I had once before. And I find out there's so many cultures that make something like this. The Philippines.
Yes.
It comes from, are you making the Lyon, France version, or is this Asian?
Well, from Europe, I think they started from France, Lyon, because they claim they have the best chicken in the world.
Right.
Yes, they have the best chicken, the blue-fit chicken.
That's right.
Started from the grand chef, Paul Pugues, and they're talking about, we have the best chicken, and master it, and do...
So let's cover up the flavor of that beautiful chicken, is what they said. Let's pour vinegar on it.
I tell you what, it is so
good. Because it is
good.
The best.
From bad bottles of wine turned into vinegar, he doesn't know, maybe.
Yeah. Right. We have to do something with these ingredients.
That's right.
Okay, so we're going to tell you, this was so delicious. There's something about the balance of this. It's called vinegar chicken, and so you imagine that it's going to be this puckering dish. You can, in fact, make it, you can add hot peppers and make it as spicy as you want.
Yes.
But in fact, it is just the way you make it, Roy, is so beautifully balanced. So if there's the tartness from the vinegar, there's a little bit of sugar in here that balances it out, and onions and
garlic.
That's
what I like.
Yeah,
that balance between sweet and sour,
yeah,
right?
Right.
Yeah, like a sweet and sour dishes from all over the world. But the acidity is really depends on your taste bud and how bold you want it or how mellow you prefer.
So you made it and brought it in for us in a kind of mild way, and that's the way our recipe is. But you could add, what kind of hot pepper would you add? Just red pepper flakes?
Well, red pepper flakes is good to, I think you say the best way to do it is say you do the recipe we provide, and before you eat it, everybody has a different tolerance for the heat. So put the red pepper flakes on the table.
I think that's a good idea.
Better this way. Then everybody can have the chicken, but adjust it a little bit.
I want to have this dish. I should get to the dish, but I want to have this dish with roasted potatoes for some reason. I know
rice.
The traditional would be rice and pasta, but there was something
soak
about,
it up.
Or maybe mashed potatoes.
Yeah.
You know,
or maybe the very popular stuff now is the quinoa. And
good idea. And that's good for gluten-free. This recipe is gluten-free, by the way.
Yeah.
So they make a vinegar chicken in Vietnam, the Philippines, Mexico. Roy, in Hong Kong, is there a Sichuan version of?
Well, we do have one dish. It's they call the lemon chicken. Usually, they're similar.
Oh, sure,
but
lemon
the lemon chicken, they cut the chicken in the pan fry a little bit, and then it's not like this one. You really cook in the stew way. So with the bone in and everything, the flavor is deeper and you feel a little bit warm.
Yeah, it's warm to the soul, right?
So,
this is winter food.
Yeah. It's really delicious.
It sure is.
Yeah. Okay, so this is what's in the dish. Chicken thighs, because they're so flavorful. And in this time, you want the skin and the bones.
The skin on and the bone in, they say. For this dish, I think when you cook stew, the thigh or the drumstick is a good part.
Yeah.
Because with the bone and the skin, the flavor is there.
Mm.
If you quarter the whole chicken, the breast will be a waste to cook in the stew, and naturally it will dry out no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
It's cheap, too. That's what I like about it. It's so inexpensive to buy chicken
legs
and chicken thighs. It's economical. You know what?
Yeah.
In these times, that's important. And the flavor you get, this is like a 5-star meal on a 2-star budget or a 1-star budget.
Yeah, and I would advise you, though, because chicken thighs don't have as much meat on them.
Mm-hmm.
You want to make sure you have put in enough.
Plenty.
Chicken thighs for people to have, say, two each is what I would say.
But that's pennies.
Yeah. So this is a recipe that serves four. So you have about 5 pounds of chicken thighs with the skin and the bones for flavoring. If there's oil, you can spoon that off on the top of the recipe later. But Roy has a trick in his recipe for getting rid of the excess oil, which is so clever. So the chicken thighs and then garlic cloves, about a half a cup of those, a red bell pepper that you slice, a yellow bell pepper that you slice, a few stalks of celery, a whole white onion that is diced, some fresh thyme, just a little, bay leaf, herb de Provence, tomato paste, a sherry vinegar, low-sodium chicken stock, available anywhere, a little touch of salt and sugar, ground black pepper, unsalted butter, not too much, and some corn oil to cook this in. So you take a cast iron pot, whether it's from the hardware store or, the fancy Le Creuset, whatever it is, cast iron pot, and the oven's on 375, but you're going to start the pot on the stovetop, right, Roy, with some corn oil and butter together. And yes. That depth of flavor helps
to start the browning process and to get the flavor out so in a better way.
Chicken thighs go in there, skin side down, and you flip them over for just a few minutes, and they brown. And then you set them aside. And then, Roy, this is the part where you discard.
Yes, to take away most of the fat, like we mentioned, a 2/3 of it. Whenever you brown the meat, the protein, they say we leave the caramelized. The meat that they call the fang and the juice and this.
We call it the caramelized bits.
Yeah. Okay, good stuff.
Caramelized beautiful, bits. Crunchy things down there. Mm. Okay, so you discard much of the oil, and then on medium, you add to what's remaining in the pot the vegetables, the salt, pepper, sugar, cook for about 10 minutes, add a little bit of the tomato paste, add the sherry vinegar, stir it up. Pour in the chicken stock. I mean, really, you're making a stew and just pouring a lot of things into this pot. And then you put the chicken thighs back in that pot mixture, add the thyme and the bay leaves, the herb de Provence, make it boil for a quick second, and then you put that pot in the oven for about 45 minutes. You want a lid on that, Roy, or not?
Leave it uncovered.
Uncovered. Okay. So, and then in 45 minutes, it's done. So this is something that essentially, after a little tiny bit of browning on the stovetop and throwing a bunch of things in a pot to stew in the oven,
yes.
You are done. And it is so, so delicious. So this recipe, thanks to Roy Ipp, this is his personal recipe, and this is at our website right now, along with our mitzah, which is the breadless pizza, at WNPR.org. Click on Programs for the Faith Middleton Show, and of course you'll see the Food Schmooze link. I'll take you right to all of the recipes. Roy, you've got on your menu a cassoulet in the wintertime.
Yes, yes.
You do yours in a different way than what I've normally had. This is my favorite cassoulet I've ever had. Now tell me, because your white beans, garlic, some herbs, whatever they are, and the duck, and then there's sausage, it's kind of layered, but it's not all mixed up together. So can you explain what it is that makes this different?
I think, say, the way I do it, cassoulet, the major ingredients for cassoulet is obviously, the bean, the garlic, the tomato, and also the herb. The herbs, I think, thyme is the herb with a very nice, delicate flavor, especially when using the herbs to cook in the liquid. And I will stay away from using rosemary cook in the liquid because so was it so overpowering. And thyme is the best one to do it. So duck fat, to begin with, for the cassoulet, I think, it's an open secret ingredient.
That's a secret ingredient. Yeah. Everything. It should be.
You start the duck fat and caramelize the whole garlic and get a very nutty, deep flavor to begin with. And then add the vegetable and then the stock and the tomato paste, everything that make the dish is say like a very nice flavor, but without making it too heavy and stuffy.
Mm. Yeah,
because you add a little bit more of the brothy there.
So yours is more loose than the heavy, sticky.
More up to date.
Yeah. More healthy too, right?
Yes.
As healthy as cassoulet can be.
What is he going to say?
No, it's healthy. I eat it myself too.
As healthy as cassoulet can be.
It's my son's favorite too.
Yeah.
He loved my cassoulet a lot too.
Kevin, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know
How could you not?
Huh.
It's like the French version of baked beans. Right? And we love baked beans as Americans.
Yeah,
come on.
No,
it's
true.
There's some fancy baked beans there.
Yeah, the
compliment from the customer is great.
Yeah.
The compliment from your wife and your son, that is priceless.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes they lie.
The customers are the wife and son.
They're the same category.
Yeah.
We're with Roy Ipp of Le Petit Café in Brantford, Connecticut. Though, wildly, I asked Roy to come in, and we certainly have talked about his restaurant on the show before, and here I am talking about one of his menu items. But he's really here for a home dish that he cooks, his vinegar chicken, which is not
I got a question. Could you get it ready to the point where you're searing it and getting it ready? Can you throw it in the crock pot? Because
Are you talking about the vinegar chicken?
Vinegar chicken, yeah, because I'm the crock pot kind of guy. Could you
get it? Yeah, absolutely.
And then when you get home, it's done.
Yeah, brown the chicken pieces and then throw it all in?
Yeah, get it up to that point where you said get it to where you simmer it. And then right before you were going to put it in the oven, take that mixture and put it in a crock pot.
Absolutely.
Put the lid on it, put it on low, go to work. When you get home, it's done.
What a
Could
good
you
idea.
Could you brown the chicken the night before, sure, put totally. It in the refrigerator, pull it out before
Absolutely.
You leave?
Absolutely. Chris, very, very creative.
No, I've got a thing for crock pots. I've been known to have one or two laying around.
One
we
or
all
two.
Like, we all like to walk in the door. And have dinner.
Yeah. You know? That's why I love it. It's amazing. I did it the other night at home. I put something, and I work in a restaurant. I still set the crock pot. And when I got home, I had a stew bubbling, and it was awesome. I was thinking about it all day.
I'm just, you know, I'm learning how to use the crock pot without resorting to a recipe.
Yes.
I'm just in the process of learning at which point it can go in there.
Well, when you figure that out, let me know because I'm still unsuccessful even with the recipe.
Oh, my God.
You
I
are?
Love
what
it.
Happens? Lauren?
Almost everything I make in the crock pot does not turn out.
Is it what happens?
It dries out. So I even threw away my old crock pot and got a new one. I thought, oh, there must be something wrong with the setting.
Nope.
It's me.
No, it's you. I don't know what it is. No, you know what? I think it is. It's the recipes you're using. Sometimes recipes, and probably Roy can say, some things don't work in the crock pot because when I first started using a crock pot, I didn't even know what one was. My editor, Linda Juca at The Current, said, you have to try this. And I'm like, what is it? And the first three recipes I did were just disasters. And then all of a sudden I tried an Asian dish. It was a pork that you simmer in soy sauce and chicken stock and a little bit of sugar and stuff. And I thought about it before I put it in the crock. This recipe should work in the crock pot because you're just simmering it all day on the stove.
Yes.
So, and boom, that was the revelation. So certain things go really well in a crock pot and certain things are just not for the crock pot.
Well, is it the size? I wonder, Lori.
It could be.
So the amount of liquid for the length of time that it's in the crock pot for you is not – You know, it's not matching.
And
somehow.
Then the fact that this is getting to be so scientific about the size and that it just made me put it away and never use it again.
I don't think. The other day, I took my crock pot and I was like, you know what? I want to try something new. So I took a brisket. You know how you make it for the holidays with the Coca-Cola? And I wanted to do that for dinner. My friend Lee White does it in foil and then she puts it in the oven so she doesn't have it, you know, covered in liquid. And I was like, I wonder if you could do that in the crock pot. So I did. I lined my crock pot with foil. I put the brisket in there. I poured my Coca-Cola and the Lipton soup mix because that's the secret ingredient in Lee's brisket. And then I folded over the tin foil and it made a little packet, squeezed it down there, threw the lid on it, left the house, came home.
Why was the foil necessary?
Because then you don't need to have so much liquid because that's one of the things with the crock pot is when you have things covered in liquid, it gets diluted so it's not as in flavor intense. So what I did was basically used my crock pot as a low temperature oven.
So how far up did the liquid go?
It was just – no, it wasn't in the pot. It was in the foil. I just put half a can of Coke in there.
No kidding.
Yeah, so it was just like bathed in there. So it steamed in this foil packet.
And did it brown?
With Lee's brisket, you don't brown it. It's a special brisket recipe she does for the holiday. And all it is a brisket braised in Coca-Cola with a little bit of mushroom. And it's heaven. It's heaven. And again, so there's the thing with the crock pot. You didn't even have to think about it. You just fold over the foil. What's the guy say? Set it and forget it.
There you go.
Well, that is really fun. That is fun. Okay, so now we know that you can do this in the – and we'll make sure we adjust the recipe online. So we'll say you can also do this in the crock pot if you want to. I think I am going to try that. So, Roy, you were in Hong Kong before coming to the U.S.
Yes.
So is that where your love of French food began? Or did it start over here?
I started here in America, in New York. My first place I settled is in Manhattan with my lovely mother-in-law and my lovely father-in-law, the family. And then we stayed there. Winnie introduced me to the French Culinary Institute where we took the cooking classes together.
Yeah, so Winnie did pastry,
nice.
Right? Your
we,
wife?
Yeah, we took the pastry classes together and then we move on to the La Technique to finish the comprehensive cooking together. But try to, but at the midterm, say, because of she got pregnant, and so she dropped out after the second. But she still know more than I do.
She was paying
attention right
more. Yeah, she said the right thing.
You're good to go when you get home. This is great. That's one thing I have never asked you. So how, right now, how popular is French food become in Hong Kong? is it considered a little exotic or unusual? Because, I mean, the chefs in Hong Kong are unbelievable.
Okay. I think the lifestyle in Hong Kong, everybody is a hushy-rushy everything. French food, traditionally, is it like a 2, 3, 4, sometimes 5 hours to finish a meal. In Hong Kong, the culture, who does that that has more than 35, 45 minutes to finish dinner. A lunch or even dinner? Everything is so fast-paced in Hong Kong. For French food, the style, you really want to enjoy French food, they say, like, in the setting of the atmosphere and how they work, you really have to spare, like, a 2, 3 hours to enjoy the meal. And the lifestyle in Hong Kong, French restaurant in Hong Kong is popular, but it's not for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not talking about the price, but it's a matter of time is money. It's not the how they live and how they work every day.
When you talk to other people who come from, say, Hong Kong, I'm mm-hmm. trying to pick a major place, and they come to the U.S., what kind of food do most people want to have that they don't normally have?
Well, I think the Hong Kong people, when they come over to America, they won't eat the Chinese food here. Because, well, I'm not talking about the Chinese food here is not as good, but they have Chinese food in Hong Kong every day. Well, say they do have a rules or understanding. Wherever you travel, you go to Italy, you eat Italian food, you eat pasta. You go to America, right. you eat
hamburger.
American food, hamburger.
That's what I want to know, because America's food is so many foods,
yeah.
so many cultures. And so I wonder what, you know, people from other countries think is our food.
Twinkies.
You know? Twinkies.
And in Hong Kong, they say the people from Hong Kong, in general, they know food. Because
yeah.
they're very picky and they travel a lot now, especially in the past 10, 20 years. They're really exposed to quite a lot of cultures and experience. And they travel overseas and vacation. They know how to enjoy their life a little bit better than it used to be.
And I assume that people from Hong Kong, of course, would know what we know when we go to China, which is that the cuisine is regional.
Yep.
And in different parts of China, you're going to have different kinds of food. And when they come here, they must know the same thing. It's just that I'm thinking when you enter New York, what in the world do you head towards?
Yeah,
you know?
There's
Where
everything.
Do you go? There's just yeah. absolutely everything.
Everything.
In fact, we're going to tell you about a new discovery in New York City, and we're going to tell you about, in Connecticut, a gluten-free bakery that is making, wow, a Mexican chocolate cupcake. Gluten-free, dairy-free, pretty darn good. Please support your local food growers and food makers. Find the food, wine, recipes, and cocktails we feature anytime online at WNPR.org. Click on Programs for the Faith Middleton Show and see the link to the Food Schmooze. More delicious conversation after a quick break. Please stay with us.
Chicken's a popular bird. Anywhere you go, you're bound to find the chicken ain't nothing but a bird.
I'm Faith Middleton with the gang. This is the Food Schmooze Party coming to you in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the east end of Long Island. You can tweet us at FaithWNPR and join the conversation with us on Facebook. Search the Faith Middleton Show. Okay, here we go. We're going to do some restaurant cruising. First thing, though, this is a market, a gluten-free organic market, which is in Granby, Connecticut on Salmon Brook Street, and it's called the Sweet Beet. And you can see them online at thesweetbeet.net. And they do meals to go, lunch, dinner, lots of baked goods, soups, and salads. Their tagline is great food without the guilt. So the Sweet Beet specializes in gluten-free and organic foods. And they sent us, with Chris,
yeah.
a box of cupcakes to try. And we tried toast coconut. We tried lime.
Yeah.
Very Mexican nice. Very nice. But the one, it is so good, is the Mexican hot chocolate, because this is a spicy cupcake. It is gluten-free. And Lori, as you pointed out, if you're a gluten-free eater, This has got to be a dessert where you don't feel like you're being cheated in some sense from flavor.
I would think you'd be so over the top excited about this because it's really delicious. And Chris pointed out if he'd be fine with this if somebody served it to him for his birthday as
a
cake,
cake
right? I would too.
Yeah, like, I don't think I would know. If you didn't tell me the cake part of the cupcake, I don't think it was a flour
cake. That's the sign of good baking. So that's the Sweet Beat on Salmon Brook Street in Granby, Connecticut, online at thesweetbeat.net. Thank you for sending over those things. We're going to continue our restaurant cruising. One of our scouts on the Upper West Side in New York City, Diane Bratcher, spotted the Baconry on Columbus Avenue. So I went online and I thought, what is that?
I thought you were going to say, so I got in my car and went over there.
The Baconry. I like the name.
It's inside a place called Amore Pasticceria. So they're obviously sharing a rent space. Uh-huh. And the chef apparently loves baking and loves bacon. And so the Baconry, B-A-C-O-N-E-R-Y, is got everything with bacon in it. And I started cruising through a lot of the comments online. And people did make the comment. Sometimes this bacon craze with chocolate is a little nuts, and it's true. Some of it doesn't taste good at all.
A little over the top.
And the people were consistently saying online, somebody knows what they're doing in here. So anyway, there are bacon and chocolate pretzel sticks. There are cookies of all kinds, bacon brownies. So some good reviews. So that's the Baconry. And thank you, Diane Bratcher, our scout over there. I recently tried Chef Francesco Demori's Italian restaurant, L'Orcio. This is on State Street in New Haven.
Really?
It is spelled this way, L'Orcio. So it looks like L'Orcio, but I guess you say L'Orcio. It is very good. I had an excellent veal ossobuco. Francesco is from Italy. He's doing the real thing. For instance, pan-fried stuffed sardines with a lemon vinaigrette salad, homemade ricotta gnocchi with tomato basil and smoked mozzarella. Veal scallopini with a white wine sauce with prosciutto di Parma in it, pine nuts, capers, and raisins. Yeah. And that is served with Belgian endive. Plus a three-course Friday lunch for $19. So that's L'Orcio on State Street in New Haven. So then I looked, I said, let me find out what Elise McClay is thinking. So Elise McClay is the chief restaurant reviewer at Connecticut Magazine. Chris, you just got 3 stars in there. Roy,
congratulations.
Roy, in the past, you have gotten, would you get 4 stars, I think?
No.
How many? 15 stars.
No.
Elise
McClay is a very nice lady, and I think she gave me review one time. She gave me a 2-star. It's a good start then. The chances going down is just not that much. Going up is higher.
By the way, I should add the New York Times gave Roy an excellent. So anyway, so Elise McClay says that she went to a new restaurant in Westport called Post 154. So there were all kinds of things on the menu. They had some hits and some misses. But the thing that attracted my attention was this thing they're serving called the Hamburger Experience. This is a cheeseburger stacked with crispy pork belly, avocado, and enchilada sauce. So Elise ended up giving the place 2.5 stars and, liked a number of the chef's
dishes.
Better than
my first review. Huh? It must be very good.
Okay. So, what do we think? We can get traditional burgers. We can get creative burgers, and then we have the trend toward the extreme burger. And I would say this, Chris, you're looking at me with surprise. You don't think pork belly on a burger is extreme?
That's extreme.
Avocado and enchilada sauce? That sounds pretty extreme.
Yeah, that's extreme. You're right.
With cheese. Don't forget the cheese.
Yeah, let's not forget that.
The question is, what do we think? That actually could be good in my mind, but it also could be, so many flavors that it would just be absurd. So, what about this trend toward the extreme in sandwiches, on pizzas, whatever it might be?
I don't know. I'm a bacon cheeseburger. That's extreme for me. I just like a plain burger. Yeah. So you taste the meat.
Yes.
Charred, nice crispy on the outside and mid-rare on the inside.
And a beef flavor.
Yeah, and the beef juice. Flavor and the juiciness, a little bit of salt, and that's all you need. And if you want to go crazy, then bacon and cheese.
Okay, well, that's what you like.
Yeah, that's again, no, that's personal.
The question is this a kind of marathon eating experience when people order one of these giant burgers? Is this the kind of food version of macho eating? Or are people eating this because they think this is the most delicious thing? That's what intrigues me. You know, have these food shows that are on television right now that take you to all these extreme on these extreme eating adventures. Is you know, has that created a culture of, well, I'm going to tackle this next?
Oh, yeah.
Or is it about flavor?
I don't know.
That's, I think it's about attention.
Yeah, I'm with Lori on that. I think it's about attention.
We're talking about
But if it works, look at Daniel Boulud in the
foie gras burger.
Yeah, now that could be considered extreme, but boy, is that good!
Well, fat and carbohydrate mixed together, and
heaven.
I think that is the win-win recipe. Then,
yeah
it's a formula. That everything like a chocolate with raspberry, that kind of thing. Hamburger, the fat together, just double it up. Supersize it.
This now America. You're talking America.
I'm still learning.
That's
no, you got it.
It's
got
a long
it.
Way to
no,
go.
No, you got it right
supersize
there.
It.
Supersize.
Yes. Well, talking about burger, yesterday I went to a place and with Winnie and I was in Avon to meet my dentist. Yeah. There's a place across the street. It's called a Burger Fi.
Yep.
I had the burger with cheese, double cheeseburger with a fried egg.
Oh.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, juicy and
the egg little, running down
yeah,
a little
a
bit.
A little messy, that kind of thing. The funny thing is they have a vending machine, is the Coca-Cola vending machine. I never seen the orange Coca-Cola, lime Coca-Cola, that kind of thing. It's interesting.
Did and you try it?
No. I tried it, and then when you just press the button and come back to me, is it lime and orange, okay? Try it. And it's very good.
There's a name for that machine. I can't think of it.
Is that a good idea or not? Is that a smart idea for Coca-Cola to fool with its, you know,
recipe.
Precious recipe that is different for each region of the country
Coca-Cola
and each country
freestyle.
In the world?
Coca-Cola freestyle.
Freestyle.
Oh,
yeah.
I bet you they're monitoring it, too. And when they find something that's really popular, maybe you'll start seeing it on
it's
the
shelves. All the different. It's Coke and Sprite and the root beer and all
yeah,
of them.
All
they can mix all the different flavors.
Same that's
company.
All their companies.
And it's a cool
Did you
place,
like it?
Too. Yeah, I like it.
Yeah.
And the burger is very good.
Yeah.
What was that called? BurgerFi?
BurgerFi.
Okay,
Burger
in Avon. Mm-hmm. So I just want to be fair to Post 154 because I've talked pretty exclusively about just that burger and we got into that whole debate about it. But the chef there, Alex Rosado, is from Puerto Rico. He's been cooking in Florida and the Caribbean and in Miami, San Juan, all over the place. And so he loves a kind of Latin twist on things. And so, for instance, he's doing a Portuguese octopus with a red chili sauce. And that sounded good to me. A few other things that Elise McClay mentioned in the review. So Post 154 in Westport, Connecticut. Somebody just told me that there is a Moroccan restaurant. I'm always looking
Where?
For Moroccan good Moroccan restaurants, and you have to go quite far to find them. There aren't any around our studio in Greater New Haven that I know of.
Yeah.
And so there is one, I just noticed, in Westport, Connecticut. So I'm interested to find out, you know,
so
whether
good.
They're doing the real thing there.
Can be so good, can it?
Mm-hmm. Chris, we have a Facebook message.
This is from a listener from Tampa, Florida.
Ooh.
This is from Jack Coretto, and he's in Tampa, Florida, and he writes, "Hi, Chris. My partner and I listen to you and Faith from here in Tampa and absolutely love the show. I used to live in Connecticut my whole life, but moved to Florida in 2000. Been a faithful listener ever since. Rock on."
Oh, isn't
nice.
That nice?
Tampa,
we
Florida.
Want,
really
nice. We want them to invite us down, don't
yeah.
we?
Yeah.
We
could,
right
can't we do
now.
A show in his, from his house?
On the road. Yes, I think we should.
I think we should do
we
a show
talk
from
about
the beach.
All the diners on the way
we
down.
We are waiting the tickets now.
Okay.
Okay. All right, before we end the show, I want to talk with the two of you because we have two chefs here, Roy Ibb from Le Petit Café on the Green in downtown Brantford, Connecticut, and Chris Prosperi of Metro Bis in Simsbury, Connecticut. There is a technique that chefs use that sounds all complicated, and it is so easy. So many things I cook, I do this way. Starting on the stovetop and then sticking that pan, that fry pan, you know, oven-safe fry pans right into the oven to finish it off. No, the question is why, because it's about even cooking once it gets in the oven. So you use the stovetop to start it, and then it goes in the oven. And if you two would explain how this works. Let's say we're cooking a steak, and we've got a cast iron skillet. So what do we want to do? We want to start by searing that steak on both sides.
Yeah, high heat first, right? So you get the caramelization. That's like one of the most important steps in cooking a steak. So a little salt and pepper on the outside, very high heat on the pan.
Any oil
to start
in there?
A little bit of oil and something that can take the high temperature, like Roy
corn
said,
oil.
Corn oil or some kind of vegetable oil, peanut oil being the best. But if you're, you know, allergies, you don't want to use that. But something that has that high, you know, temperature, that can take that high temperature. So you want to sear it on both sides, right, and get that nice brown char.
You're not trying to cook it through.
No. You just want to cook it really high and hot and get that nice sear and browning on the outside.
Okay. So a few minutes on each side.
Yeah, maybe even not even just to get that brown.
Okay. So on high heat, then you take that skillet and it goes into the oven at what temperature would you say?
Well, it depends on what kind of meat you're doing it. Say, like Chris mentioned, to start it on the stovetop. And
let's say a sirloin steak.
For the steak, say like it's a red meat, I would like to do like, for me personally, I do like a 475 to 500. Mm-hmm. But if it's a white meat, like the veal, the pork, you don't want to toughen the meat because the heat is so intense inside the oven. So we'll do like around 400.
All right. So if it's a steak, it's 475, 500 degrees. And the whole pan goes in the oven, depending on how you want it done. It doesn't go in there very long. But this finishes the cooking. But here's the trick. It makes the whole steak cook evenly.
Yes.
And so you're not going to have rare parts. And it's the simplest thing to do.
At some point, you say when you do the meat or anything stovetop, and you put in a high heat oven, 400 or either 500, and then the rule of thumb to cook through the protein, like the meat, is say like 10 minutes per inch. Mm-hmm. 10 minutes per inch is a rule of thumb to cook in the oven. Say like you took it how many minutes? Okay, let's depend. You want rare or well done. Mm-hmm. If you cook medium well, at least like a 10 minutes per inch.
Yep.
But it's very important point is that when you're cooking, I personally enjoy high heat cooking in the oven, and then finish the cooking when it is resting. It's called internal cooking.
Yep.
Internal cooking, usually anything, you take it out from the oven, and then the temperature will go up at least like a 3 to 5 degree within that 10 minutes. So we get the order, and then we cook it, and then we call that the resting area.
Yep.
It's called the parking. Yep. Park it there, and then when you need it, 10 minutes, 15 minutes resting, inside, everything go even, and then when you have to serve the dish, you put it under the broiler now
to
refresh it, to make it warmer.
See,
and
this
the sauce
is why,
on the top.
This is so this why is we key. Pay you people.
You know, but this is no, but the he's right. The resting part, or I love it, parking. The parking part is as important, if not, you know, more important than the actual cooking in the oven.
So this is what a chef is keeping in mind. All those orders, everybody wanting a different temperature. Not only to the degree that you want it, but calculating what is the carryover cooking while it's in the parking lot, and then having it just be warm enough or nice and hot when it gets to your table. All those things in the food traveling in and out of spaces.
ADHD
to get to you.
Helps.
Well, everybody like in the kitchen, everybody like create or invent their own system. Like in one for the. For the steak, one for the duck, one for the lamb, you know. When you see the tray, you see, usually I think you will have the similar system. On the left is the rare, to the right is the well done.
I got one, Thomas Keller, his parking lot is the best parking lot on earth.
In the butter, right?
Yeah. He takes whole butter and melts it down with a little bit of water so it stays in its emulsion. And then that stays at about 160, 180 degrees, and that's his parking lot. So the steak comes off the grill, and instead of like – I do a little pat of butter on top when I park it. But he just takes it, parks it. He actually takes it and puts it in the butter. So it's actually sitting in 160-degree butter parking.
Bath?
A little bath.
Bath. Yeah. Heaven.
Bad. Very bad.
Evil, but heaven. And if you've eaten that person.
One says heaven, the other one says very bad. Very interesting.
Heavenly very bad.
What we want in heaven.
Oh, my God.
I don't mind giving you one more chance.
I want to park myself there.
Me too. Now, there's a spa. Okay. Thank you all so much. Roy Ip, Le Petit Café, downtown Brantford on the Brantford Green, and Chris Prosperi of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut. Lori and Jonathan, the Food Schmooze on WNPR airs Wednesdays at 3 and 9 p.m., Saturdays at noon. We're online anytime. Find the recipes, food products, restaurants, value wines, and easy cocktails we feature at WNPR.org, including Roy's Vinegar Chicken and Mitza, the breadless pizza. Here's to pleasure, my friends, and remember, never eat more than you can lift. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton.
Everybody eats when they come to mind.